Now, our reading again will be from the book of Psalms, and tonight we will have a number of scriptures to read, commencing in Psalm number 9. Psalm number 9. It's a Psalm of David, and we commence at verse 6. O thou enemy, destructions are come to a perpetual end, and thou hast destroyed cities. Their memorial is perished with them, but the Lord shall endure forever. He hath prepared his throne for judgment, and he shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall minister judgment to the people in uprightness. The Lord also will be a refuge for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble. Now, Psalm number 18, for some verses. Psalm 18. It's quite a lengthy title for this psalm. To the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day, that the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies, and from the hand of Saul. And he said, verse 16, he sent from above, he took me, he drew me out of many waters, he delivered me from my strong enemy, and from them which hated me, for they were too strong for me. They prevented me, or they confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Now, a verse from Psalm 34. A number of verses. Psalm 34. Again, if you take a mental note of the title, a psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. Verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Now, Psalm 37, just for a reading, Psalm 37, and you notice the beginning of the psalm, fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. Verse 16, a little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous. The Lord knoweth the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. Now, Psalm 94. We move quite a bit over in the book to Psalm 94. You notice the questions of verse 3. Lord, how long shall the wicked triumph? Verse 16, who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Or who will stand for me against the workers of iniquity? Unless the Lord had been my help, my soul had almost dwelt in silence. When I said, my foot slippeth, thy mercy, O Lord, held me up in the multitude of my thoughts within me. Thy comforts delight my soul. Shall the throne of iniquity have fellowship with thee, which frameth mischief by a law? They gather themselves together against the soul of the righteous and condemn the innocent blood. But the Lord is my defense, and my God is the rock of my refuge. Now, just a page or so over to Psalm 96. Psalm 96 and verse verse 4. For the Lord is great and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods, for all the gods of the heathen are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. And the last reading is Psalm 118. And we read in verse 10. All nations compassed me about, but in the name of the Lord will I destroy them. They compassed me about, yea, they compassed me about, but in the name of the Lord I will destroy them. They compassed me about like bees. They are quenched as the fire of thorns. For in the name of the Lord I will destroy them. Thou hast thrust sore at me that I might fall. But the Lord helped me. The Lord is my strength and song, and is become my salvation. The voice of rejoicing and salvation is in the tabernacles of the righteous. The right hand of the Lord doeth valiantly. The right hand of the Lord is exalted. The right hand of the Lord doeth valiantly. I shall not die, but live and declare the works of the Lord. The Lord hath chastened me sore, but he hath not given me over unto death. And that's a very interesting psalm, as you know, but that will be more than enough for our reading tonight from the Holy Scriptures. We trust the Lord's blessing upon his word. Now, I want to do very much similarly to what we have been doing in these previous nights. And I would like again to look at a group of seven. Those who have already been here will know that on Monday evening we considered Psalm 84, because very uniquely in that psalm we have seven references to the great title Jehovah. And also in the same psalm we have seven references to the great name, the great title of God, Elohim. That's the only psalm that has each of those titles seven times. And well, I'll say nothing more about that. It's interesting, the changes. The Psalms, up until Psalm 83, there is no Psalm that has one title more than another. And afterwards, the Psalms all have different titles in different proportions. But just right in Psalm 84, those two titles are in equal proportion. So it's a very unique psalm in that sense. And we thought about Jehovah and something of its meaning. Then last night we moved to Psalm 86. Because in Psalm 86, on seven different occasions, we have that other name or title of the Lord. Not Jehovah, but the other title, which I mentioned then, is capital L and the small O and small R and small d. And that's what you might hear some of our brethren speak about, the Adonai, or Adonai title of the Lord, the sovereign Lord, the great administrator of the universe. And that title occurs seven times in Psalm 86, and it's the only psalm in the collection of 150 that has that particular title on those seven occasions. Now, so much for that. What I want to try and do tonight, very simply, and I'll keep it more brief than I have been doing in these other nights, we have read quite a number of references, but we have read the seven references in the Psalms to three words that make a world of difference. I would use that if I wanted to put a little title on the message that I have in mind tonight, that would be it. Three words that make a world of difference. And the three words are these: but the Lord. But the Lord. And in these seven different psalms, we have situations that are described. Situations that potentially could have become disastrous, but the Lord. Situations that presented to the psalmist a very, very discouraging set of circumstances, but the Lord. And because the Lord intervened, And because the Lord was introduced into the picture, a very dismal picture was altogether transformed. I would say that those three words have been used by many of the children of God down the ages. And time and time and time again, many a Christian could have said, it would have been a disaster but the Lord. I would have failed completely but the Lord. It would have been a hopeless situation but the Lord. And I hope that when our time is over, to go away home tonight, that we will again appreciate how much we owe to the gracious intervention of the Lord. And those blessed buts, and situations that have been remedied and recovered, and situations that have been interrupted because the Lord has intervened. Now, we have always heard, for many years I've heard, our brethren speak about those great but gods from the New Testament. And how meaningful those verses are, I don't need to go through them. Children of wrath, even as others, but God, who is rich in mercy. That's Ephesians chapter 2, as you know. Jew and Gentile are just teetering on the edge of a precipice that would plunge them into eternal perdition. And they're just there. By nature, children of wrath, even as others. And you say, they're gone. Yes, they're gone. But God, who is rich in mercy. And they're brought back from the edge of the precipice. And they're seated with Christ in heavenly places. And the only explanation of the mighty transformation is this. But God, who is rich in mercy. And you've that great, but God commendeth his love toward us in Romans chapter 5. You take, for example, 1 Corinthians. Take 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And the Apostle Paul allows the Corinthians to take a look around the assembly. He says, not many noble, not many mighty, not many wise, but God hath chosen the weak and the base, and the things that are not, and so on. You're very well aware of that passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. That's not how we would act. If we were wanting to commence a new organization, you would try and include as many influential people as possible. And if you wanted to get a new organization off the ground, people that had a little bit of clout, and had a good degree of education, and people that had a good standing in the community, if you could get them at the very commencement of your new movement, it would give the whole business a good start. But when God was commencing a work at Corinth, they never had seen an assembly before. It was altogether new. How did God commence? He didn't use the conventional methods of human beings. He picked up through the gospel the very base and the bottom layers of the social pyramid, and with those people that were just most unpromising material, his grace fashioned the beginnings of the assembly there. But God, that's salvation. You get the same thing in chapter 2 of 1 Corinthians. It's not now salvation, it's the great subject of revelation. And the apostle says, eye has not seen, ear has not heard, has never entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love him. But God has revealed them to us by his Spirit. That is the great truths of New Testament revelation. They are not discovered by the normal means of intellectual pursuit. I haven't seen, ear heard, hasn't entered into the heart of man, but God has revealed them by his Spirit. The same thing in chapter 3, and I can't go any further in 1 Corinthians. Paul planted, Apollos watered, but God, it wouldn't have mattered if you had 10 Pauls, and if you happened to have had 10 Apolloses. If you'd had 100 Pauls and 100 apostles, all watering and all working and all laboring, there wouldn't even have been as much as a blade of grass to grow. What was it? Whether it's salvation in chapter 1, revelation in chapter 2, multiplication in chapter 3, the Apostle Paul says, but God giveth the increase. So there are many other passages, even in 1 Corinthians, where those two little words occur that change a situation. And the appearance of God and the bringing of God into the situation makes a complete difference. Now here we are back then into the book of Psalms, and in these great chapters of human experience, I want to highlight just very quickly and briefly a number of different aspects of life's experience that can be transformed by the Lord. The first one that we have taken a reading, and I'm not going into any of the Psalms, these Psalms in detail, is Psalm number 9. It's a Psalm where obviously the people have suffered a good deal of injustice, and they have received a raw deal. In fact, I would gather from the Psalm that some of the faithful, some of the righteous have even been murdered. And quite a number of things have happened that there hasn't been any righteous judgment. And the question is being confronted is this: will there ever come a day when the wrongs will be made right? Will there ever come a day when righteous judgment will be established in this world? Unrighteousness seems to flourish, as good old Longfellow put it in his poem. Right forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. That's the way it seems to be in our society. That was the situation, broadly speaking, in Psalm chapter 9. And the psalmist says this. He says it will be very easy to get discouraged with the unfairness and with the injustice of these times. But in verse number 7 he says, but the Lord shall endure forever. He hath prepared his throne for judgment. Dear Christians, maybe we have a Christian here tonight and you have been unfairly treated. Maybe, for all I know, there is someone here, and in the very place of your employment, you have been on the receiving end of some very, very hurtful injustice. And it's not within your power ever to set things straight. And you feel yourself to be crushed. And you have been belittled. And you're just powerless to cope with the changing circumstances of your life. Never forget the fact that the Lord shall endure forever. That's a statement that's a common statement in the Bible, well worth following through, a statement of great comfort. The word of the Lord endureth forever. The mercy of the Lord endureth forever. The truth of the Lord endureth forever. And dear Christians, let us just keep in mind that God has established his throne. In fact, if I remember, that's how Mr. Darby translates this very expression, but the Lord shall endure forever. He translates it something like this: but the Lord sitteth forever. Nothing that ever happens in this disturbed planet of ours will ever succeed in unseating God from his throne. He sits in perfect poise and in perfect peace. And despite everything that is tottering and everything that is tumbling and everything that is twisted, we as Christians, in the unfairness and in the fever of life, we can say, but the Lord shall endure forever. It is a great comfort to every Christian to get a firm grasp upon the unchanging character of a God who is absolutely righteous. And he will establish not only a throne in heaven, but he will establish a throne in this world. this very passage. You needn't worry about looking at all the verses. It says, he shall minister judgment. And at the end of the chapter, the Lord is known by the judgment which he executeth. And getting to verse number 19, let the heathen be judged in thy sight, that the nations may know themselves to be but men. You know, God will bring about a day when the nations of this world will be compelled to bow at the footstool of his throne and to acknowledge his righteous judgment. In that poem that I was just quoting, I'm not sure that Longfellow came altogether to a biblical understanding of the state of affairs, but he did say, right forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. One death grapple in the darkness, and but that scaffold sways the future. And in that dim unknown, standeth God behind the shadows, keeping watch above his own. Twice over in this psalm, I think it is, we're told that the righteous will not be forgotten. Sometimes in the injustice and inequalities of life, we might be tempted to think that God has forgotten the righteous. But the day is coming when it will be demonstrated that the righteous have not been forgotten. And in fact, this is also the very psalm that tells us that the wicked shall be turned into hell with all the nations that forget God. People forget about God and seem to prosper. And at times it almost appears as if God has forgotten about his people. But the tables will be reversed. And God will be seen to remember his people, and he will vindicate them with righteousness. Dear Christian, if you have been oppressed, cheated, take heart. You say, this has happened to me, that has happened to me, the other thing has happened to me. Take this text. But the Lord shall endure forever, and he hath prepared his throne for judgment. It was the very same, or at least a similar truth, that sustained the heart of the Lord Jesus at Calvary. When he was reviled, he reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but he committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. In the fever of life, we have a but the Lord that can calm our anxieties and can restore our perspective. Now just a word on the second reference in Psalm number 18. Again, it's a Psalm of David. And it's telling us, at least in part, about those days when David was suffering from the hands of King Saul. He tells us in verse 16 of Psalm 18, I'll read it again, you don't necessarily need to turn to it. He sent, that is the Lord sent from above. He took me, he drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy. Verse 18, they prevented me, or they confronted me in the day of my calamity. But the Lord was my stay. That's a very precious text. He said, I was sinking in deep water. And he said, when I just felt in those swirling waters that I was about to go under, he said, I felt a hand that came down from above and just grabbed me before I went beneath the surface for the last time. And he plucked me out of the waters. And he was not only a hand that kept me from drowning. He said, when mine enemies were just coming in like a flood. And he says, they confronted me in the day of my calamity, and they were so close that they licked their lips and they said, this is it. He's finished. We have caught him. And he said, they were just closing in, and they said, this is his day. His time is up now. When they confronted me in the day of my calamity, he says, but the Lord was my stay. And he said, when everything seemed to be giving way beneath my feet, and when I felt myself to be sinking, He said, I discovered that the Lord was giving me special support. And in the spite of all the floods that surrounded me, I didn't sink. And I didn't drown. Well, I don't know. I don't know about the dear believers here. Has there ever been a time in your life when you felt you were going down? And when the waters of different kinds of troubles came flooding into your very soul, and you felt an awful sinking feeling within your heart, and you wondered, will I ever survive this? Will I ever be able to get out of this storm? And a little bit like Peter, when you saw the billows, you began to sink. There was a hand that reached and took you out. And the Lord was your stay. But the Lord was my stay. Thank God for that but. But the Lord shall endure forever. Times may change. Jesus never. But the Lord was my stay. We sing in that familiar hymn, thinking about salvation and thinking about death. When all around my soul gives way, He then is all my strength and stay. Well, that will be true, dear Christians, in the ultimate of life. But even in the present experience of life, there can be times, whether it's unemployment, whether it's bereavement, whether it's domestic problems, Christians can find their lives flooded, deluged by all kinds of difficulties. It's great in the midst of the swirling streams of life's problems to feel that you are going down, but the Lord strengthened you. He supported you. You say, well, does that just mean that the Lord's a prop? That's one of the complaints that people commonly make about Christianity, that it's just a crutch. They say that you people just use Christianity as a crutch, and you couldn't get through life without it. If you had a little piece of nervous rigor, and if you were emotionally strong, you wouldn't need the crutch of going to meetings and singing sentimental little songs. And it's those little songs that keep you happy. And you have yourself brainwashed and beguiled with pious platitudes and with spiritual sentiments, and your Christianity is just a crutch. We don't need that crutch. We are strong and we can face life. Well, so be it, dear Christians. Let them say it's a crutch. I tell you, to be honest, it's a crutch that I would rather have than some of the crutches they use. Some of them need the crutch of intellectual snobbery. Some of them need the crutch of sensual pleasure. You know, you could laugh. A healthy man or a man that thinks he's healthy can laugh at a crutch. But somebody that has two legs broken, a crutch is a very useful thing. When you discover in life that you don't have the power to stand in your own strength, it's great to have a crutch. That's what happened to David. He said, I was sinking down, but the Lord was my stay. One of the interesting things that I find very fascinating is to take this psalm, because David's going back, as I say, to those days when he was being chased by King Saul and hunted as a partridge upon the mountain. He's talking about those experiences now, and he's using poetic language. And, well, his poetry is very dramatic, I'll admit. He says, the waters came in upon my soul. He sent from above and he snatched me out just in the nick of time. And I just escaped by the very skin of my teeth. And earlier in the psalm, he speaks about the chariots of heaven sweeping down from the high heaven just to rescue him. But when I go back to the first book of Samuel, there's no sign of any chariots. And when I go back to the first book of Samuel, there's no sign of a hand stretching down from above the stars. It's maybe just, Jonathan comes to talk to him. And it's maybe he hears that the Philistines are coming. And there's nothing dramatic in the book of 1 Samuel. But now he's looking back upon what seemed then to be very ordinary escapes, and he just received help from other people, and by ordinary means the Lord just delivered him and It was all very well, I tell you the truth, it was less than ordinary. But now that he's looking back upon it, in those rather ordinary experiences of life, he can see the hand of the Lord in a very marvelous way. You look back on life and see times that you were almost gone. Maybe the Lord just used a meeting like this to give you a little boost. Maybe he just used an encouraging phone call or an email from a praying believer. Just that came to you in the time of deepest need, and it just settled your mind and it steadied your thinking. That was God's way. That was the hand coming down to reach you. That was the Lord giving you a little bit of additional support. But the Lord was my stay. In the fever of life. But the Lord. In the floods of life. He said, I would drown. But the Lord was my stay. Now, equally quickly, a word from Psalm number 34. This is another one of those psalms that goes back to that particular period in David's life. And it tells us, in fact, at the title of the psalm, as I indicated in the reading, that it was when David changed his behavior before Abimelech. Well, that's one of the little dips in David's life. You remember that his emotions seemed to get the better of him. And the Bible tells us, if we go back to the record of the first book of Samuel, that he was gripped by fear. And he went away down to the Philistine country, and of all places to go. And he went to Achish, the king of the Philistines. And he wrote graffiti on the wall. We can hardly think about that, you know. He pretended he was a madman. And he let his saliva dribble down upon his beard. And he acted the maniac. And he pretended. He didn't want old Achish to know that this is the boy that killed the giant. So he said, I'm going to have to put on a bit of disguise. And I'm going to have to behave in such a way that this Philistine king will never suspect that I'm the conqueror of the giant. So he pretended to be someone that he wasn't. Disguised himself, acted the hypocrite, because he just didn't want to get into trouble and so on. And his fear, you know, one of the most potent emotions in our lives is fear. Tell me this. You might never have acted the madman. You might never have written graffiti on the walls around Hatboro', and might never let your saliva dribble upon your beard and so on. Did you ever find yourself in any situation in life where you pretended that you weren't a Christian? Because you knew that if these people recognize I'm a Christian, they will give me stick. So I'll be like them. And in my language, and in my dress, and in my attitude, and in my behavior, I will act like them. So that they'll never suspect that I'm a Christian. And you were afraid. You know, fear. Fear, well, it did that with David. You remember what fear did with Abraham? Abraham, when he went down to Egypt out of fear, he pretended that he was a half-brother of Sarah instead of her husband. He pretended. You say, but there was a bit of truth in it. Well, there was just a bit of truth. But he was giving the impression he was someone else. You remember the same with Peter. He pretended he was someone else and not one of this man's disciples. It's very, very easy for us to fake a different identity in order to save our skin. And fear can drive us to do that. But you know, when David writes this psalm, he has changed his opinion. And again, I read it for you because you don't need to turn to it unless you have it open. David was delivered out of that situation of compromise. But he has discovered that he wasn't delivered by all this play acting. And it wasn't this piece of ingenuity that delivered him. Not at all. He said, it was the Lord that delivered me. It was the Lord that delivered me. And he said, I have learned a lesson. I was driven by my fear. He said, that's not the kind of fear that you should have. For example, he says in verse number 4, I sought the Lord. He delivered me from all my fears. And in verse number 11, he says, come, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord. He said, that's the fear you should have. Not the fear of the world. But the fear of the Lord, he said, I look back with shame upon a day in my life when fear made me a coward. But he said, it's the fear of the Lord. And, just to come to the text, because I have to leave it, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord, here's our great text, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. Isn't that great, dear Christians? You know, being righteous, that is being in fellowship with the Lord and being right before him and being right with him, does not guarantee a trouble-free life. It nearly seems from the reading of the psalm that if you are righteous, you will have persecutions, you will have afflictions, you will have adversities. And sometimes we would try and get away from that and escape some of the reproach. No, says David, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. As you know, the Apostle Paul later used that very verse when he was writing to Timothy in his last epistle. He says, Timothy, you know all about my afflictions, my persecutions, my hardships. You know all about it. And he said, out of them all, the Lord hath delivered me. It's good to know, dear Christians, that whether it's the fever of life, as in Psalm 9, whether it's the floods of life, as in Psalm 18, whether it is the fears of life, but the Lord, what would we do were it not for the Lord? How would you have gotten through this far had it not been for the gracious intervention of the Lord? Now I'll just turn over a page or two to chapter 37. This psalm is quite well known. Again, it's speaking about the righteous and the wicked. It's the fretting psalm. It begins with those three great admonitions. Verse number 1, fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. Look at verse number 7. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way. Look at verse number 8. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. Well, you know, it can be bothersome when you see the prosperity of evildoers and people that have absolutely no scruples and they have no principles and they seem to have unbroken success. That can be quite disturbing and agitating. This word fret that I just drawn attention to three times, it's a word that has to do with becoming hot under the collar. I think that's about as close as we could get in our English language. It means to get all heated and to get all red and to boil and just to wonder, what am I going to do? And in the pressure, it's possible just to get provoked and you could say, there's no point doing what's right. It doesn't pay. If you try to pay your taxes, and if you try to live righteously before the Lord, you have nothing but problems. These people that dodge the tax man and fiddle, they seem to go from strength to strength. It doesn't pay, and I am conscientious, and when I'm conscientious, I seem to have nothing but trouble. These people that have no conscience. Well, it's just a story of unbroken success. You say, what's the point? What's the point of always trying? What's the point of always being godly? What's the point of keeping yourself curtailed? Why do you not just let yourself go? Give it a break. No, he says, fret not, he says, and don't let yourself do evil. He says, if you let this get to you, and he says, the pressure builds up and it provokes you to do evil, he says, you'll ruin your testimony. He says, no, fret not. What do you say about
It's just not easy. It's not easy to keep yourself calm when you see all these inconsistencies. He says, I know that. And he not only gives the negative injunction to fret not and repeats it three times, but he also gives those positive injunctions. He says, delight thyself in the Lord. Trust in the Lord. Rest in the Lord. He says, that's what will keep you calm. Not just that I tell you don't fret, but he said, I'll give you a positive, the recipe for peace of mind. Delight in the Lord. Trust in the Lord. Rest in the Lord. And he said, don't forget the day is coming. Get down to our verse. Verse 16 of Psalm 37. He says, a little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. You know, dear Christians, I would say, and we are thankful for all that the Lord has given us. And we are thankful for every little piece of material prosperity that we enjoy. And may God grant that we'll hold it as a stewardship from His gracious hand. But you know, a small house with no debt and a contented soul is far better for a Christian than a large mansion and depths of debt and agitation of mind. It will always be true that godliness with contentment is great gain. Never become envious, dear Christian, of the prosperity of the wicked. This world has nothing. I know it's the old maxim of materialism. The man that dies with the most toys wins. And everybody's trying to get as many toys as they possibly can. In this age of technology, there are more toys than ever. You Christians, most of you will recognize, and I'm speaking even to younger folks here, the more toys that you have, the more it will bring into your life pressure. You know, people can't find any rest. People hardly ever find themselves in a situation when they're away from email, when they're away from computers, when they're away from iPods, when they're away from text messages. I feel we have reached a stage where the Lord can't speak to the most of us because we have so many other people talking to us. And our little brain, unless some of you have a larger brain than I've noticed. But our little brain is bombarded with such a blizzard of messages, and about 50% of them trifle, that if the Lord wanted to speak to me, He would likely need to send me an appointment to get doing it. He didn't need to do that with our grandparents, because they spent time alone with Him. Away from everything. Dear Christian, better. A little that a righteous man hath is better than a massive fortune and unrighteousness. But you say, how's it going to work out? How are we going to survive? If you don't keep up with the race, you'll never survive. Well, this man said in verse number 17, the arms of the wicked shall be broken. But the Lord upholdeth the righteous. He said, the Lord will look after the righteous. But the Lord. He said, you don't need to find your security from this crazy world that's seeking to collect more of these little pieces. He says, but the Lord knoweth. In fact, well, maybe I should. If you just listen to the earlier part of the psalm. He says, the wicked have drawn out the sword and they have bent their bow. That is, they have it in for the righteous. They take their sword out of their scabbard and they have drawn their bow. Now, our text tells us that the Lord, the arms of the wicked shall be broken. Once a boy gets his arm broken, he'll not pull out his sword. Once he has his two arms broken, he'll not bend his bow. He said, the day will come when all that the wicked have designed to do, they'll be unable to achieve it. The arms of the wicked shall be broken. They'll be incapacitated. But the Lord upholdeth the righteous. He said, they have arms that will never break. The arms of the wicked will be broken and they'll be standing just helpless. Not able to draw a sword, shoot an arrow, or fire a shot. Standing helpless. But he says the righteous man will find that supporting him will be the mighty arms of omnipotence. But the Lord upholdeth the righteous. Thank God for these great buts of divine intervention. Now I'll read a verse while we're getting near the time. I think I'll maybe leave out and I'll go to the last one. That will do because time is up. Psalm 118. It's the seventh one. In Psalm number 94, we have the answer to life frustrations. In Psalm 96, the answer to life's figments. It talks about idols. They're nothing. It says, but the Lord made the heavens. Well, I'll leave that. Psalm 118. Again, it's a situation of great distress. I'll read the little part of the text that's relevant from verse 10. He says, all nations compass me about. Universal opposition. They compass me about, verse 11. Verse 12, they compass me about like bees. Verse 13, thou hast thrust sore at me that I might fall, but the Lord help me. He said they were with all their artillery arranged, and he said they were just taking aim and I was their target. They wanted to bring me down. They thrust sore at me that I might fall. Well, you say, did you fall? He says, no. He says, I didn't fall. He says, I would have fallen. But the Lord helped me, and the Lord has become my strength and my salvation. It may be. I don't know where all the dear believers before me tonight are located. Maybe it's in the place of education. Maybe it's in your place of employment. There could be someone just now, you're suffering a good deal of opposition, criticism. Maybe you're the target of considerable animosity just because you're a Christian and they're ganging up on you and you're greatly outnumbered and you've been ostracized, and when you go into your office tomorrow you feel as if you're just walking into a hornet's nest. That's what this man says. He says they were around me just like bees. And he says if they came around me just like bees, they were all just about to give the sting that I might fall. And he says, I would have fallen, but the Lord helped me. And he said, when I look back upon that critical circumstance, he said, the only thing to which I can attribute my survival and safety is this, that the Lord helped me. Dear Christians, thank God again for his intervention. Whether it's the floods of life, the fever of life, the fears of life, the fretfulness of life, the frustrations of life, the figments of life, or the foes of life, we can say we don't have any strength to cope with the odds which are against us, but the Lord is able to give us all that is required. Now I'll close with doing just two things. One thing really in two parts. And it will help to illustrate what I've been talking about tonight. Where is the first time in the Bible where you get that expression, but the Lord? And just keeping in mind what I've been talking about there for the last 35 minutes or so. You go back to the book of Genesis. And there's a young man has been snatched from his home, sold by his brothers. He has come down into Egypt. He has been accosted by a very dangerous woman. She has fabricated a lie. She has left a smear upon his character. As a result of her intrigue, he's cast into prison. You say, well, that's the end of him. He's ruined. His character is ruined. Certainly his reputation. He has lost his job. He has lost his liberty.
He has lost his future. And the young man that seemed to be so promising and feared God, he has suffered because of this evil woman. He has lost everything. He's cast into prison. The next verse says, but the Lord. Ho ho. That will be a problem for Potiphar. That will be a problem for Potiphar's wife. That will be a problem for all the people that told lies and supported lies and plotted against Joseph. But the Lord was with Joseph right there in the prison. Right down in the dungeon into which he had been placed. But the Lord, and as you know, the result of the Lord's presence with that young man eventually brought him to the second place in the land of Egypt, thoroughly vindicated. Dear Christian, wherever you might be today, do what's right. Live for God. And even though you finish up in prison, maligned, misrepresented, ostracized, never forget that these three words can make a world of difference. But the Lord was with Joseph in the house of the prison. Where's the last occurrence of these three words in the Bible? Well, when you come to the second epistle to the Thessalonians, you remember chapter 2, where the Apostle Paul speaks about the man of sin and all of those horrific scenes of the future. And when you come into chapter number 3, he tells them that he asks the Christians to pray for him. For he says there are many unreasonable men. And he says not all men have faith. And then he adds these words. But the Lord is faithful. And he says he'll establish you and he'll strengthen you. I want to leave those words with you, dear Christians, just as we conclude the meeting. We might never meet again. And as I part, I hope you'll remember this. I haven't aimed at any great big sermon, but I would just love that when my face and my name and my voice and everything about me has been forgotten, and some of you Christians find yourself crushed into one of life's tight corners, never forget, but the Lord. You say, I'm finished. I'm down. I'm defeated. I'm overwhelmed. I'm overcome. Yes, all of those things might be true. But the Lord. But the Lord is faithful. And thank God, whatever may come, hence through all the changing seasons, trouble, sickness, sorrow, woe, nothing changes God's affections. Love divine shall see us through. Take these words with you into tomorrow. Into next week, back to your family problems, back to your college problems, back to assembly problems. You might say, but things in the assembly, dear brother, you don't know, you're just a visitor. Things in the assembly are very, very difficult. Yes, but the Lord could change it. Things in my life are impossible. Yes, but the Lord. Things in my family at the minute are just unbearable. Yes, but the Lord. You say, but our boys have left this. They don't come to the gospel meeting. I brought them up in the fear of the Lord. They have gone away and we have lost them. And they're unreachable and untouchable. Yes, your boys are unreachable, but the Lord. But the Lord. If you rule the Lord out of life, life becomes dark, dismal, and disastrous. Bring the Lord into any situation. The darkest situation is lightened. The dullest situation is brightened, and the most dangerous situation is altogether transformed. Thank God for the transforming presence of the Lord, and may He grant to all His people here that His gracious intervention will be abundantly known in our lives in whatever area that is needed. Shall we pray?